This is the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast recorded under a roof, so you can hear the pleasant, soothing rain. Today with me is Dragon of Rochester. How are you doing?
Pretty good, I think. This week has been a little rough. I'm still recovering from last week where I didn't get the extra 6 hours of editing time. And I'm still trying to figure out my time schedule for, you know, writing and editing. So those 6 hours just killed my my speed. I'm probably not going to be able to put out more than one chapter of Tanking Hits this week.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, so which story do you want to talk about first? You have a plethora of stories we could talk about.
I do have quite a few stories. Let's start with Tanking Hits then.
Ooh, okay, yeah. Could you please state for the record the full title of the story?
Hold on. Taking Hits, I level when I get hit in the balls to make sure I got it exactly right.
Here you go, guys. Completely professional. We all absolutely not know every single syllable of every little title we wrote.
why do I do this to myself?
I don't know. But you mentioned yesterday that there was a story behind that story.
Yes, so I got into this debate with No Dragons.
Which is, of course, your arch nemesis.
No, he's fine. He's a good guy. of course, him being No Dragons and me being Dragon of Rochester does seem like he would make an amazing nemesis.
Doesn't it?
He was trying to find an amazing idea for his next story. And I kind of argued with him or debated with him that the idea didn't have to be amazing as long as the execution was solid. Uh-huh. And, you know, we went back and forth for a while. And then I was all like, you know what? Here, I'll just prove it to you. Go ahead and tell me the worst idea you could think of for a story. And he's all like, well, how about I reincarnated as a tank, I level when I get hit in the balls. So that is what became Taking Hits.
Oh my lord. I forget which author it was, but that was literally also the start of one, like, best-selling series.
Jim Butcher, Furries, yes. Of I'm gonna butcher this, but Calderon, I think.
I see what you did there, and yes, that was exactly it. Yes, it was. I think the prompt he got was like, it's the lost Roman legions, and it's also Pokemon. And yeah, that was a best-selling series, so I think you're following a good recipe there.
I don't know about that.
I mean, right now, as I'm looking at it, it's sitting at 132,000 views with 1,600 followers. So you're doing something right.
I'm certainly trying.
So, No Dragons. Was there any wager behind it, or did he...
Oh, no, no. I think he even forgot about it. once I went to go and prove myself right, which is fine. Cause like one Discord conversation, over a year ago, of course he's not going to remember.
Well, maybe he'll listen to this podcast and then he'll remember.
Maybe. But I love challenges. In fact, most of my stories were created because I tried to challenge myself. Mm-hmm. Or because of contests. It wasn't that I didn't have an idea for a story, but the contests make me more determined to finish it.
Okay, I definitely can see that. But yeah, you also write other stories, right? You also you don't just write about elf boys getting kicked in the balls.
Ah, yes. Probably my more famous story is When a Mortal Ascension Fails, Time Travel to Try Again, which mm-hmm. does not have a comma in the title, because when I was creating that on Royal Road, I was told that there was an issue with punctuation and searching for stories.
Oh.
So rather than have people have a hard time searching for the story because the punctuation was either missing or not there or whatever, I just decided to go without it completely. Mm-hmm. And that's why it does not have a comma in the title. I think they have since fixed that issue, but that was why it doesn't have a comma right now.
Okay. I mean, you can just add it now, right?
I could.
I know that tone. I use it myself. Actually, it was a question I wasn't going to ask because I thought that maybe there's like a really great reason behind it and I'm just a noob. But I guess I was proven right. But please, go on. Do tell me about When Immortal Ascension Fails, Time Travel to Try Again.
Well, the story is about an immortal cultivator called Lynn, or Fairy Lynn. She got to the top of the world, and then during mm-hmm. her lightning tribulation, the protagonist of the story she was transmigrated into got involved with her tribulation, making it several times larger, and it just killed her. Well, it killed her body. But she still had the chance to fly somewhere and, you know, recreate her body or whatever, you know, like immortal cultivators do. But her soul fell into a tear in time and space and brought her back to when she was 9 years old.
All right.
Sorry, no, I clicked my headphones and it started the YouTube video that I have in a tab on here. And so I had this really high-pitched Japanese voice in my ear all of a sudden.
I might actually leave that in. That is great. Okay. So I was imagining you suddenly, like, I don't know, like some nature documentary about platypuses or something. Platypi? Okay. So
that's the intro to When Immortal Ascension Fails. Then she becomes 9 years old again. And so she first goes to try to take revenge against the original protagonist because she's in the same village as him, the same starting village as him. And then she realizes, oh, he's like, you know, 7 or 8 years old. I can't kill a 7 or 8 years old little kid. I'm not evil. So she instead takes him as her little brother, quite possibly to, you know, use him in the future to help her ascend to greater heights or protect her or whatever.
Ooh.
But, you know, throughout the story, she slowly comes to realize that maybe if she just teaches him to not be a complete douchebag, he won't be. And there's a mystery there of, you know, how he became the reprehensible bastard that he eventually became.
If you are a friend of the Kazoo ad, you have to be very, very strong now. I regret to inform you that Sherlaloon went and bought the tier that removes the Kazoo ad from all podcasts. And now it's gone. So you got Sherlaloon to thank for that. On the other hand, if you want to add the Kazoo ad again, there's a tier for that too. Thanks so much for listening, and let's get on with the show.
Okay. And Lin's goal is to stop that.
Okay. And of course, all Wuxia protagonists are kind of bastardy. That's hyperbolically speaking, of course. I please don't lynch me. I know there's like many good Wuxia novels out there.
There are some good protagonists and a lot of asshole protagonists.
And sometimes that's okay too. If that's something you want to read. I mean, there's certainly a market for it. Sometimes people just want to be very grim and defy the heavens. I think that's okay. But I also really adore that you're taking that trope and, yeah, you're giving it more introspective spin, even if it is in the shell of a story about a 9-year-old immortal cultivator jade princess, I guess. So,
well, the part of how I started writing it was because Silver Pen actually had a short story contest, and I wanted to write a satire of Chinese cultivation novels, and most specifically how they are utterly ruined with harem tropes.
I was going to ask something that's maybe slightly insensitive even, because this is your podcast about you mostly, but I'm sensing that this might also have been the birthplace of Beware of Chicken.
Oh, Beware of Chicken?
Yeah.
I don't know. My story came before Beware of Chicken, actually.
Yeah, I think you can just boldly go and claim credit for inspiring that person.
I don't know about that. I doubt it. Casual Farmer is an incredible author. Very kind, I hear.
Oh, yeah.
At least from the people who've worked with him before, I've heard that. He's really good to work with.
He's also very reclusive, I hear, so.
Probably. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Oh, no, not at all.
So, as I was saying, Silver Pen had that contest. I entered it.
Mm-hmm.
And I won a month worth of free Discord Nitro from it, which was nice. But the thing was is that I had wanted to do a cultivation story like When a Mortal Ascension Fails for a while. And that just helped me start it.
Again, like, it's a challenge that started a cool story for you.
Yes. Cold Steel Dig was also a challenge, actually.
Okay. You want to talk about that one for a second, then?
Sure. It's a completed story, though I do still have vague plans to write the second novel for it eventually. but someone challenged me to write a mining lit RPG because at the time Game Limit wasn't a thing. So if it had been a thing, then they would have challenged me to write a mining game lit.
All right.
So I had been watching The Labyrinth, and I wanted to do something that combined a Labyrinth-esque story with mining and a video game. And that's basically how I came up with Cold Steel Dig.
Okay. Do you want to go through the plot real quick for people who don't know it?
Oh, sure. Kelly and her little brother were hanging out. It was her time to have their shared computer.
Mm-hmm.
But her little brother was freaking out about this game that he was playing, which was this 2D mining game.
All right.
And she accidentally ended up causing him to fail, which then brought the ending boss of the game into the world for a brief second. And he basically kidnaps her brother. And then he sends her into the game And in order to get him back, she has to reach the end of the game and defeat him. So it's,
oh no,
it's obviously based off of, well, it's obviously stealing the premise of The Labyrinth.
Ah, okay. And also Terraria.
Sure. The gameplay that I used is actually based quite a lot off of Dig Out. Oddly enough, Dig Out was a very simple video game. And then after I'd written this story, they had ended up changing quite a bit of it to be similar to some things I added in my story that weren't in the game originally. So I don't know if they read my story and picked up on that, or if they had already had plans to do that or what.
I think, again, you can just boldly go and claim credit. That's two great things you've inspired already. And many more may follow. Stay tuned.
Yeah. I mean, I do have a degree in video game art and design.
Oh!
And I worked in the industry for 8 years, so.
Oh! Oh, that's actually pretty interesting. Because on the show, we talk a lot about books, right? Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about Lit RPG and Game Lit and Progression Fantasy. But A, we never really talk about the people coming into Lit RPG, where they're from. That's super interesting. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Do you want to talk about how you went from there to here?
Oh, well, so I got a job in the video game industry right out of college.
The dream?
Yes, it was a dream, but it was with a small studio called Machine Union. We mm-hmm. worked on our own games for a while. I think only one of them was published, which is called Bittos Plus, and it's for WiiWare. There's also a PC version of it called Bittos, but I forgot the extra part there. Then, you know, the recession hit us really hard, so I got laid off for several months, and then they brought us back, mm-hmm. or at least brought me back. I worked for another several years, and then once again was laid off. This happens a lot with the video game industry.
Oh, yeah.
But a few months later, I came back to the same company. I can't remember how many times I was laid off specifically off the top of my head. But I did eventually come back. And throughout those years, I had worked on games for as an art outsourcer for Pocket Gems. So I worked on Paradise Cove.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many. Campus Life, I think. I don't know if it ended up being published under Campus Life, but that was the working title. Let's see. Pets 2.
Oh.
I worked on a few others. And then the final year that they brought me back, I worked on this game called Monopoly Towns, which was released in Indonesia, but was never released in America. And that was a pretty fun game.
Huh.
Yeah, some things fell through, so they didn't end up publishing in America. But I was fired before that, actually, for being too slow.
What?
Yeah, I'd like to think that I was too slow because I had spent 8 months working crunch hours and was just completely exhausted. And I had also been focused mostly on the art management side rather than the art side. But, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I work in IT too. And
yeah.
It's tough. This has been a very interesting story, though. And at that point, later on, you were just... I mean, how did it make you feel, and what happened then?
I think I needed the break.
Yeah.
I was pretty exhausted after working those eight months of crunch time. It was 13-hour days, 5 to 6 days a week.
Oh, wow.
For 8 months straight. It was rough. But, you know, it's the video game industry. The company was usually very good about that, though. That's partially why I stayed with them for so long. But sometimes things happen.
Sometimes things happen. Okay, so you needed the break. And then afterwards you said...
I decided that perhaps working in the game industry wasn't for me because during those 8 years... I had been working on improving my writing. So it's not like I wasn't writing during those 8 years. I was working on improving my writing, getting better, because I'd always wanted to do the art and the story for video games.
Okay.
Now I just want to do the story, write my own stories.
Without any programmers or publishers coming in the way and telling you how your story is going to change.
Yeah.
Shout out to Saving Throw. I see you. So definitely. I can see where that's coming from. And you immediately went from that to Royal Road, or was there a detour?
Oh, you know, I spent about a year working as an Uber driver.
Oh.
In the beautiful San Diego.
Oh.
And I really got to appreciate the city near where I lived. Because San Diego is just so gorgeous.
Okay. I hear it means a whale's vagina.
What?
Have you not watched Anchorman?
No. Oh, wait. I did watch Anchorman, but it was like a long time ago. And I think I had a little bit to drink. So it's a bit fuzzy.
We're talking about everything but Lit RPG and progression fantasy on this podcast. But actually, I think I'm actually going to leave this in. So if you're listening to this and you don't know what the fridge is going on, that's my fault. But I think this conversation is just too charming to not leave it in. So you were working as an Uber driver.
Yes, I was working as an Uber driver. During that time, I just sort of, you know, worked, recovered, thought up ideas for stories. Then I eventually ended up writing Cold Steel Dig as a short story that unfortunately I was really, really bad at recognizing what constitutes a short story and what constitutes a long story. So the outline that I had for the short story turned out to be 90,000 words.
Okay, that's a very good outline. And then you filled it with life.
Yes.
I can see where you're coming from. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
Oh, I'm a half pantser, half plotter, which, you know, half and half. So I've been... most recently calling myself a creamer.
Which is an interesting choice of word.
I know. It's probably a poor choice, but, you know, there it is.
It speaks of confidence. I really like it. So, Dragon of Rochester, everyone. The person who inspired Beware of Chicken. That digging game. And in general, total creamer. So, please, you go on.
Maybe cut that out. Maybe cut that out.
Nope, this will stay in. Unless, of course, you want me to take it out. I will take it out. But if not, this will stay in. Yeah. I mean, this podcast is already like going way off on a tangent. And I'm here for it.
Okay. What were we talking about now? Were we getting into
You were talking about San Diego. You were talking about driving in San Diego, taking your time, and then...
Yes.
Writing Dig.
Yes, then I decided to write Cold Steel Dig as a short story and put it up on Railroad. I finished it within about 3 or 4 months. And then after I finished it, I decided to write Tome of Stealth.
Oh.
And then I got pregnant and got the worst pregnancy brain ever. It was so terrible. Imagine being sleep deprived, the worst you've ever been all the time.
Huh.
So I had to pause my writing, and I ended up taking a hiatus for a little over 2 years.
Oh, wow. That's a long pregnancy.
Well, there was a pregnancy and then taking care of my little dragon afterwards.
Yeah. By that time, you'd already finished the Tome of Stealth?
No. I had written like 20, 40,000 words of it. Mm-hmm. And then I only had like maybe 50,000 words left to write before the first book was finished.
Okay.
Actually, I had started posting When Immortal Ascension Fails towards the end of posting Tome of Stealth. And When Immortal Ascension Fails had ended up having way more followers. And that's when it became my main story.
Which is really cool. So what was that like, actually, for you to take such a long break? I imagine that it mustn't have been easy.
Oh, no, it was not. I knew I was ready to start writing again when I started having intense dreams that I had to write down, and I actually had some free time to write.
Uh-huh.
But it still took me a while to come back.
Yeah. I think many people who read books don't know that many authors have this issue that writing for us isn't just, you know, the thing we do to earn money, like going to an office job or something. But it literally, well, for many people, it calms us down. And if you don't do it for a while, life gets kind of stressful.
Oh, yes. There are some people who write one book and are done, and then there are some people who cannot not write. They have to write.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, so 40 minutes in, we can go to the second question. What's the best advice you've gotten as a writer?
Actually, I have two pieces of advice that are the best. They are equal.
Equally the best, okay.
Yes. I've been in a writer's group since 2011. And there is a gentleman in my writer's group who writes fantastic stories.
Mm-hmm.
They are so beautifully written. And I can't wait for him to finally get them published somewhere so I can read them. But he told me that one of the things that changed how he writes and edits is Self-Editing for Fiction Writers by Brown and King. And I think that is one of the best pieces of advice that I'd ever gotten.
Okay.
The second one...
Wait. You need to elaborate.
Okay. Why is getting Self-Editing for Fiction Writers the best piece of advice?
Yes.
Well, because I learned how to edit. I learned how to do inner monologue, for one.
Ooh.
I was writing all of these third-person stories with no inner monologue, or very little of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm writing first-person stories. That's all inner monologue.
All right. Okay.
But, yeah, it teaches you how to edit. It teaches you how to see things that can improve your story. It's just an all-around great reference book for editing.
Huh. I'm definitely going to look it up.
Yes, I'll send you a link.
Okay.
So you can post it in the notes.
Yes, I will definitely do that.
You know what time it is? That's right, it's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is about a friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one. So go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time.
The second piece of advice comes from Dan O'Bannon's Guide to Screenplay Structure.
Mm-hmm.
So for the longest time, I had been struggling to get past the first 20 to 30,000 words of a story, because I just didn't know what the middle was supposed to be like. I had the beginning, I knew what was supposed to happen, and then I knew what the ending would be, but I had no idea what to do for like the 60,000 words you're going to have in you, the middle of your book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way he explained it is just so beautiful and simple. And that's in the middle, things get worse.
Oh, that's so good.
Right? It was such great advice. And after reading that, I was like, oh, of course. Why couldn't I think of that?
Yeah. Some people just do profound words of wisdom.
Yes, absolutely.
On that note, mm-hmm. actually, I have a book here standing right behind me. It's well worn. The pages are a little bit yellowed already. And you know that like frizzy look books get on the top and lower parts of the page when you've thumb through them a lot. This book has this, and it's Beginnings, Middles, and Ends by Nancy Kress. It's in a series of Elements of Fiction Writing, and I can wholeheartedly recommend this too, because it talks about the big dreadful middle. Mm-hmm. And I've never really struggled with that, because I'm a pantser through and through, but I did struggle with coming to an end. And this book really helped me with that. It also helped me with the beginning, and I think if we combine that with your recommendations, ooh, we will be unstoppable. Okay. Well, great. So please do send me the links. I'm going to post them under the podcast or under the YouTube video if you're watching on YouTube. While you're in there, please do check out our Patreon link. Please also do check out Dragon of Rochester's books and all the recommendations we're going to be giving you in this podcast. And with that, the small interlude is already over. And I would like to actually go to the next part. If you could go back and change something about your latest three stories, what would it be?
Maybe pushing the humor harder. That's something I'm always mm-hmm. trying to do. Push the humor mm-hmm. harder, farther, faster, stronger.
And then two robots come in.
Something like that.
It's so rare that someone gets all my references. Thank you so much. There is a book called, I don't know where I got it. It's somewhere. I think it's called A Comedy Toolbox. How to be funny even though you're not.
Oh, yes. Borjas. I've been introducing people to that one.
Yes. Yeah, it's really good when it comes to comedy. And he says that basically comedy is time and pain.
Mm-hmm.
I also really love the, I think it's the Andy principle. We always love our own words the most. Definitely go check that out too. I'm going to link it underneath the podcast too.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, you were going to... Hmm?
Yeah, I'd want to push the humor. Actually, I met him at a book signing of Ooh. The Comic Toolbox.
Oh, wow.
So I think I might have a copy of it signed by him.
What? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
That is definitely an advantage of living in the States.
Mm-hmm. One of the amazing things that I found by living close to San Diego is that there are a lot of really large fantasy science fiction authors coming to do book signings.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes during Comic-Con, it's the, you know, the famous San Diego comic convention.
Yeah.
Sometimes outside of it. So I have novels by Brandon Sanderson, Brent Weeks, it's all signed by the author, which is, I find, yes, got to meet with them in person, which they are amazing to see in person. So if you ever have the chance, definitely go to one of their book signings.
Will do, if I get the chance. I'm not jealous at all. What are you talking about? All right. Okay, good. We're 47 minutes in. This is the longest commute anyone has ever had. And people are probably listening to this podcast, like, glued to their, like, subway seats. And we are keeping them from their jobs. So we need to go through this real quick.
Okay, I'm sorry.
please don't be sorry. We are both equally responsible for all the tangents we went on. Like, remember me talking about Anchorman? Okay. Books that you love. Please do shout out one or two new books or like recent books that you've discovered that haven't gotten a lot of traction yet, but you think are amazing and deserve more attention.
Okay. Well, Ducky's book, Rise of the Necromancer.
Oh!
I've been encouraging him to write it, actually. I've been giving him advice on it. And I'm just adoring what he's been doing with it. It's a very adventurous type of story about a necromancer and his best friend and his cat, Schrodinger, and how they get torn apart and how he gives up his life for his cat and then gets cursed with necoization or something along those lines. It is a delightful story. And he says he does not do humor well, but I beg to differ. There's another story that hasn't gotten a lot of love. Actually, so I play space opera RPG with a group. This is a tabletop game from like the 70s, right? I play it with a group of wonderful individuals. One of those is a member of my writer's group named Robert Mitchell Evans, who wrote a noir sci-fi called Vulcan's Forge that I beta read for.
Ooh.
And he got it published with an actual publisher, and he got it published right when all of those close downs happened from COVID. So what would have been his big debut just got totally ruined.
Oh no.
Because of COVID. Yes, right?
Oh no. Okay, yeah. So what was it called, and where can people find it?
Vulcan's Forge. You can certainly find it on Amazon, probably mm-hmm. other places as well.
Oh, yeah. So, support your local bookstores, by the way, people.
Yes, absolutely.
Bookstores are magical places where cool stuff happens, and they're very important to us authors because there's something so personal about it. To go to a place where, like, think of it as Royal Road, but the algorithm knows exactly what you like.
Actually, if you're in the San Diego area, I highly recommend going to Mysterious Galaxies, which is a small bookstore in the San Diego area.
Oh, okay. I mean, while we're shouting out our favorite bookstores, if you're in Berlin, Otherland is the place. Otherland is an English-speaking bookstore here in Berlin. Berlin is, in general, very much English-speaking. But go there, buy stuff from them. They're all amazing. And the story itself is very magical too. The book that I want to shout out, I'm not going to talk too much about it today because I want people to like figure it out by themselves. It's called Heretical Edge. I've read through the introduction of it, and I very much like it because it's an urban fantasy, kind of like forlorn mystery kind of thing, but it's coupled with a little bit of school fiction, so like kind of Harry Potter-ish, right? But you should go and read it. And we're almost approaching the hour mark of our recording. So any other shout-outs you want to do?
No, that's it.
Okay, cool. So this is the first podcast where no one has shouted out Merchant Crab by host. Thank you.
Well, I don't need to shout out Merchant Crabs because all of my stories already have crabs in them.
What?
Yes.
It is obvious. It is obvious, you guys. If you want your story to do well on Royal Road, it has to have crabs. We've been telling you all along. So you do the math. Thank you so much for being on. This has been a blast.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Yeah. And I think this is it. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've been listening to this on your commute, I'm very sorry that your commute takes 50 minutes. If you've been listening at home, please do wake up and go talk to your loved ones because they miss you. And that is that. Thank you for listening to the Crooked Everything podcast today with Dragon of Rochester. I'll see you next week. Bye.